Hello and welcome to the Gab and Jules Show. And yes,
Champione, Champione, oh, eh, oh, eh, Champione.
Sorry,
is this
Bayern Jules or is this Napoli Jules?
It's the battle of the leagues. Remind me who won.
Sorry,
oh, can you remind thing. Me? Remind okay. me, Gab. Right, remind right, me who right. won in the final. Who was in the final again?
I believe I was in the final, and if games ended in the 75th minute, like God intended, I would have won 2-1.
Sorry, who won? Sorry.
Ligue 1 won. You won.
Champione! Champione!
All right. I get this. Go and check it out. It's on the website. Watch the highlights. You can clearly see. You can clearly see that I was 2-1 up, and then I don't know what it is. 3 goals in 50 minutes. Hats off. Congratulations to you.
Thank you. That took a long time to come from you, but
congratulations to Neymar, who, you know, misses a penalty and then scores two sitters at the end. But I gotta say, what is it with German defenders? What is it with these people?
You see, you
How do you
the
not
defenders.
Defend a league?
You picked the defenders.
I did, but this is what I have
you
to work with.
4-2-4.
This is what I have to worry. 4-2-4, fine, but once there's 50 minutes to go, how about you sit back a little? Man, all right.
Game plan works
well
so well. I mean, come back next year. See what you can do next year. Come back next year.
Battle of the League's obviously the biggest story everybody's talking around in football, but there's a bunch of other things because the Premier League is back. We've got, we'll have Mark Ogden on in a minute. We're going to talk a little bit about Timo Werner. Breaking news as we're recording this. His move to Chelsea is now official.
Yeah.
And of course, we got Bayern winning the Bundesliga. Big surprise there. We have Napoli winning the Coppa Italia. We're talking a bit about that. We've got our last Alphabet 11.
Oh,
melancholy.
I know.
It's the Z team or the Z team if you're of the other persuasion. And of course, quick hits. So let's get the show on the road. And here we go, Jules. Here he is. It's Mark Ogden. Mark, I guess the biggest takeaway is obviously all this nonsense with Arteta and David Luiz, but let's start with City, though, because this means that Liverpool won't win the title on Monday night. Is there anything else to take away that struck you? You and Jules, you guys were both there. What looked different? Anything surprise you? Eric Garcia, perhaps?
What looked different? Well, obviously the obvious things look different. You know, the stadium looked different and the atmosphere, but some things stayed the same. And you know, Kevin De Bruyne for me looked like just head and shoulders of everybody else. The thing that was different was there was no tempo set by the crowd, and I think that's one thing that fans are going to have to get used to. That when you're at a game live, that the crowd does kind of set the tempo of a game, and make, you know, the home team can rise to it, and the away team can use its energy sometimes. And last night there was none of that. And when Raheem Sterling forced a save from Leno in the first half, it was a good chance, and it would have usually brought this roar from the crowd, and it just brought this kind of polite applause. It was almost like you were an outer court at Wimbledon in the first week of June. It was just a strange kind of reaction. So that was a different thing. But in terms of the actual football, you know, I think what we've found in Germany as well is that the better teams win. You know, there's not really many surprises now because the lesser team, I guess, can't use the crowd or X factors to influence the game. It's basically a training match where the better players win. You know, there's no pressure on really in terms of outside influences. So it was more predictable from that point of view.
I'm going to troll Jules a little longer because I'm going to give him the false hope that we won't be talking about Arsenal at all. But I did just one other point on that. I know this has been suggested in the States and it seems stupid, but then I thought about it, like, maybe it's not. If people watching at home are watching on with the FIFA sound, which I know you guys didn't because you guys were there, but why not put the sound in the stadium, or would that just be way too hokey? What's your take on that?
You know, I did wonder about that, you know, because before the game and during the game, they had drinks breaks during the games, you know, and they played some kind of weird interlude music during the drinks breaks. So they have factored in the need for an atmosphere of sorts, you know, pre-match music's played to give the players a sense of reality or normality. But piping crowd noise in, we've all been at a game, certainly the Premier League, where there's a myth around the Premier League that it's the most exciting, passionate league in the world. And there are a lot of games in the Premier League where you go and it's silent for 5-10 minutes, especially at the Emirates, as Jules will attest, you know. So, and the Etihad as well at times, Old Trafford. A lot of these stadiums aren't particularly noisy during the game. So I don't know how you'd factor it in because you couldn't have this crowd noise pipes in, which would be abnormal in the sense that there's noise all the time. So I don't know how you'd work it. But yeah, It's a tough one. I do think there would be it would help to have some sort of noise, but we have to accept that sometimes you've got a ground and it is quiet. You can speak to somebody 10 yards where they can hear exactly what you're saying. So it's a tough one to work out that.
All right, enough of that. Let's move on to Arsenal. Jules is dreading
it. We could talk a bit more about City if you want.
No, don't need to. All right, Jules, start at the top. I don't understand Arteta's approach here from an explanation comms point of view. Pre-game, they ask him about David Luiz, and he says, well, he's not starting because of things that happened in the previous weeks, which I presume is either his contract situation.
Yeah, it is his contract.
Or he hasn't been good. He thinks Pablo Mari's all that. But then they ask him about, oh, look, Ozil's not even here. Is he injured? No. So why isn't he on the bench? I'll address this after the game. 3 hours later, after the game, why isn't he here? Oh, it's a tactical decision. Well, what the hell does this mean? Well, if it's a tactical, couldn't you say it before the game?
Can
you explain this? What goes through the... Well, is he badly advised? Is he nervous? Was he told
No. I think he knows exactly what he's doing. It just means I think the tactical argument is the one that I think Unai Emery also used when he didn't...
Well, why not say it before the game?
I don't know, maybe he didn't want the focus to be too much on Ozil before the game. I mean, clearly he was, I thought, for what I saw from that interview before the game, he was very much into the game already and he didn't want to talk about people who were not there, which I can understand kind of thing. There's no need to...
Drop your highest paid player and he's fit and he started every single game for you before, it's part of your job to explain why you haven't done it.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter so much. Before the game, you want to focus on who is on the pitch, right? And especially if you're Arteta. After the game, certainly should have explained it a bit better. Unless he didn't want to really say why, because it's not for tactical reasons that Ozil wasn't there.
Arteta is it because he didn't take a pay cut?
No, it's because Arteta has been all and he's repeated to the players again and again and again in the last 3 months. It's all about the attitude. It's all about the worker training, listening to what he wants, doing what he wants as well on the pitch. And Ozil wasn't there somewhere on the bench that I don't think they expected to be on the bench. I certainly didn't expect them to be on the bench either. I don't think Eddie Nketiah is ready to play at a game like this after 3 months off at City. I don't think Joe Willock is ready to play a game like this. And I don't understand why Lacazette and Pepe and players like that were not starting a game like this.
Augie,
I'm just going to say, does this not strike you as Arteta's making a point?
Yeah, of course.
To the players and also to the people upstairs that I'm planning for the future and I'm planning for the future without Mesut Ozil, without David Luiz, because they just don't perform. I mean, David Luiz, I think, has his good days. He also has his very bad days, as he did last night. And I think Arteta's thinking, right, well, you know, this next 6 weeks, these next 9-10 games, Arsenal, unless they're very fortunate, are not going to get in the Champions League. They might not even get in the Europa League. So he's got to start building for next season now. And these two clearly don't figure in his plans. And obviously, Arsenal will lose a lot of money on Ozil by letting him go this summer if they have to. But I think Arteta has to make these statements. Now, why continue to waste time with players that don't have a future in your system?
Then why not come out and say it? Because, I mean, when you started every single game, right?
Because managers don't do that.
If it's not him, I think it should be the club or somebody else. Because, I mean, I was watching on television, Mika Richards alluded to it, speculated on after the game. I think rightly so. This is one of the, what you said, was it two players who didn't accept the pay cut? Right?
Yeah.
When you it's fine to talk about his attitude and training, whatever else, but the reality is he started every single game for you, right? Since Arteta came in. It wasn't Arteta who benched him, it was Emery. Now all of a sudden you don't play him, he's not there. Surely you have to understand as a club that this is an issue. Surely you need to at least explain it. Because you know the story's going to get out somewhere and people are going to speculate and whatever.
I think it's all about the message. And I agree with you, Augie, in the sense that, okay, you want to play the kids? No problem. No, if you think they're ready, I don't think they're ready right now. If you think they're ready, play them. I've got no issue with that. But like you said, and like Augie was alluded to, say it. That's your message. You say, you know what, from now on, Yeah, you don't have to name the players. We know more or less who they are.
And you know David Luiz's contract is also expiring. So yeah, but you can't actually go.
But then Arteta says, oh, I want him to stay. And then David Luiz comes after the game and said, it's my fault. You know, this game is for me. I mean, of course, who in the same game has a red card, consider penalties, and an error that leads straight to a goal? I think the last time that happened was like, I don't know, years and years ago.
By the way, the red card was hard. Yeah.
Sorry?
The red card was hard.
Yeah, it was really hard. Even the penalty, I thought, was... The foul starts outside the box, and then I think Mahrez is clever. But anyway, sorry, just to finish. If that's what you want to do, it's cool with me. But just come and say, this is what we're going to do now. Like Ogie said, we've got 9 games to go. For those 9 games, we're going to play the kids. We're going to try things out. So we're not going to play Lacazette. We're not going to play Pepe. We're not going to play Ozil. We're not going to play Kolasinac. We're not going to play so and so and so. And this is it. But you have to be fronting it out.
Find out who can play and who can't, right, Ogie? I mean, usually, if that is going to be your plan.
Yeah, but I do think it's, you know, some things that never change. Managers will never be totally honest with fans and the media when it comes to selection. And I think unless you're Jose Mourinho and you decide to, you know, burn everything in front of you, I think Arteta has to protect the club in the sense by, if he comes out and says, I'm not playing Mesut Ozil and I'm dropping David Luiz because they're not in my plans or they didn't take a pay cut or whatever, then it diminishes their value and you have to be a club man at times and try and play in the club's best interest. I think everybody reads between the lines and knows what's happening, but for him to say it...
So what is happening? No, because Jewel says it's not because of the guy's contract. What is happening that Mesut Ozil, who is your highest paid player and who has started every single game so far, can't get into your squad of 20 people and he can't even be on the bench? What is the tactical decision?
No, it's not a tactical decision.
Well, that's what he said.
It's not that.
Why don't we ask Augie, since he said everybody can read between the lines. I can't. Augie obviously can. So tell me.
Well, if he said it's tactical, and let's take it at face value, Mesut Ozil never performs away from home. And we're talking about a different new normal. They're playing away from home. It's a different sense. He doesn't perform. I've never seen Mesut Ozil have a good game away from the Emirates. And whether it's full of fans or not full of fans, you can't trust him. You can't rely on Mesut Ozil. I think Mesut Ozil checked out a long time ago. If you're Mikel Arteta, you can't trust him to perform. Now, he has used him prior to this, before the shutdown, but maybe in the last 2 or 3 months, he's decided that he's had a lot of time to think about the future, think about the next 2 or 3 year plan, and Mesut Ozil clearly doesn't fit in that. And I don't know what he would have brought to the game last night. I really don't. Yes, he's a highly paid player, and he's an experienced player. He may have contributed more than the young kids who were kind of thrown at the deep end, but what would he have done? Would he track Kevin De Bruyne back?
No. But I guess the reason we're talking about this, if Mesut Ozil had sat on the bench, you know, socially distanced from Nicolas Pepe, we would have wondered, oh, look, how funny. They're, you know, most expensive signing ever, and their second most expensive signing, or whatever, highest paid player. Both those guys are on the bench. But we would have understood, it would have been the messaging that Jules talked about. We want to try the kids and the enthusiasm, and maybe the kids are fitter and they got fitter faster, whatever, right? I could have bought all that argument. Now, you've effectively created a Mesut Ozil problem or a Mesut Ozil issue where there really wasn't one before. You know.
Yeah. Listen, I don't have the answer right now. It's a great question. I'm hoping to get it later and write it for the website. If I had to guess right now, the issue must have been his attitude of training. That's the only thing I can see why he wasn't there. And the sanction was, and like I said, Arteta said to everyone, it's all about your attitude. It's all about the spirit. It's all about the hard work, the training. It's all about this and that. And if you don't do that, then you won't be playing. You won't be playing. You won't be starting and you won't be in the squad. Right. That's the only reason I can see now. Again, I don't know, but that's the only thing I could think of right now.
Augie, I'm going to put my Arteta mask on now and make the point that for maybe the first half hour, Arsenal, even with all the kids, even though Jules didn't like it before.
But they were well organized. I agree with you.
They did okay. And then you get, you know, Xhaka goes down after 8 minutes. Pablo Mari after 25 minutes. Yeah. They both looked like muscular injuries to me. I don't know if that's confirmed or not. But and then all of a sudden, obviously, you know, you hold out as long as you can, individual mistakes. And then you're down to 10 men and it's over.
But before we go to Ogie as well, didn't you think that City will need a bit of time to go from first gear to second gear to maybe third gear? That they were not going to come out of the blocks after 3 months off, right? No, a team who plays like them.
Of course, of course.
So but, maybe, I mean, maybe the reason why Arsenal did so well in the first half hour is because that was
I don't
the
think
time
Arsenal did
City.
So well. I thought
no, no,
they did well.
They did well,
I
mean, because City needed a bit of time as well.
Probably, yeah, but I'm also not going to go and diminish everything Arteta's trying to do.
But
Augie, are we wrong here? I mean, you saw a good Arsenal for a little bit, right? Or were you not impressed?
Yeah, they were okay. You know, listen, the first 20 minutes of any game, you know, people stick to their shape and the fitness is okay. It's when, you know, concentration drops and holes start appearing. So if you can't start well, that's a really bad sign, isn't it? So I wouldn't give them too much credit for starting well at Man City. It's just, I just think it's natural that you had injuries, as you say, the first 10, 20 minutes you stick to your shape. But, you know, Jules was mentioning City and the time it'll take them to get up to speed. I'm convinced that Pep is happy to, you know, take some chances in the first 2 or 3 weeks this restart. He wants his team to peak in August for the Champions League. They were the last team to come back into training. They didn't come back until the Friday when many teams came back on the Tuesday. Some came back even earlier than that, kind of in a kind of an informal way. So I think City will be, you know, beatable the first couple of weeks, but come August when the Champions League comes around, they'll be flying, because that's exactly what they want to do. They want to win the Champions League for a lot of reasons, as we know.
And the FA Cup as well.
And you know, I was amazed that they didn't play any friendlies. And of course they didn't have to. And they might have played games between, you know, within their squad, 11v11, no problem. But I was surprised. And I did wonder yesterday when I saw them being a bit rusty at the beginning, there was not so much rhythm. And I wonder, maybe they would have gained a bit of that by playing a couple of friendlies, even against, you know, championship teams. It was more for the fact of being those, so that kind of environment.
Jules, maybe they were playing Arsenal first game, so they didn't need a friendly.
Yeah, true. But that was their friendly.
Exactly.
I mean, I agree with you guys. I think it totally makes sense if you're Pep to say, all right, screw this the rest of the season. Let me use this time to find out what I have, to get players fit, to find our rhythm, be less interested in results. I thought that's the right thing. Let's find out if Eric Garcia can play. By the way, I hope he's going to be okay.
Yeah.
That was absolutely horrific. The collision with Ederson, you know, straight out of the NFL. In fact,
yeah, big time.
I mean, sort of reminded me Sheldon Brown and Reggie Bush. Going back to Arsenal, to give you the last word here, Augie, what do you think happens now? I mean, not have we seen the last of Lacazette, album, whatever, but Is Arteta really going to treat this the same way and saying, like, let me assess our kids, let me try Tierney at left back, Saka, you know, back at his original position as a winger and so on, and keep these other guys on standby because really they're professionals, I know what I'm going to get, or not going to get in some cases. I can basically leave them on standby and they're just going to count down for the season to end because we have nothing to play for.
Yeah, I think he has to take that approach, and I think it may not be, you know, the spoken thing at Arsenal, but I think it would actually do Arsenal a favour not to be in Europe next season. I think if they miss out on the Europa League, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. It would give him Arteta time to rebuild, reshape. Without that, there's going to be so many games in a short space of time next season, and you know, chucking the Europa League in there as well is probably not going to be helpful for a team that's in a real rebuild. So look at the players now, because this is a free hit. The next 9 games are pretty much a free hit for Mikel Arteta. So use it, because you won't get that opportunity next season. Next season is when you will be properly judged. So take this opportunity now, give the kids a chance. If they're not ready, move them on. And then it looks like he's made his decisions already about, you know, the bigger name players. I think Lacazette has to stay, because if Aubameyang goes, you can't lose both. But yeah, there are questions that need answering, and he's going to, you know, answer those questions the next 6 weeks.
Augie, thanks so much. Breaking news as we're taping this, Jules. As I mentioned, Timo Werner has agreed to join Chelsea. It is, well, you agreed it before,
yeah,
but now it's official.
Sure.
It's a little farewell message on social media. We've talked before about where he's going to fit in at Chelsea. I think my understanding, will get confirmation. I think the fee is 53 million euros in the end of compromise between the 55 and 50. There was a report from James Ollie. I think this is a really good deal. It makes a lot of sense.
Bargain.
But I wanted to ask you, because one of the issues, Chelsea's saying that he's going to play until the end of the Bundesliga season, which is easy, June 30th, not much, 2 games to go. And then he's going to join up with Chelsea in July. And to make this clear, he will not be able to play for Chelsea in the Champions League. Neither will Hakim. I need to do this correctly. Ziyech.
Ziyech.
I was corrected by somebody very kind on Twitter, and I will now endeavor to continue referring to him as Hakim Ziyech.
Yeah.
It's a story in Bild that says he won't be playing for Leipzig in the Champions League. Chelsea saying, presumably when they say he's going to join up with them in July, they don't mean he's going to join up with us in July and then go back to play with Leipzig in the Champions League when it kicks off in August in Portugal. Do you have a problem with this?
I do. I mean, I don't know what the answer is. I understand that if you're Chelsea and you've just signed him, if you, you know, well, in play in August in the Champions League, and let's say, you know, God forbid for him, but he's got a very, very serious injury, this is huge for Chelsea Football Club. So I can understand why there's probably a lot of clubs would feel not really at ease with their players continuing or finishing some of the competitions with their former club, but still current club, which I think is a big by the way, you've highlighted that a long time ago, and I really think that people took it for granted. Oh yeah, he will stay with us. He will play in August. Well, in that case, if you're Chelsea, this is not a good thing for you, like no. You said, for many reasons. If you're Timo Werner, do you want again to take the risk of playing in August in the Champions League with Leipzig when you already are a Chelsea player, because that's what you will be? I can understand why he's not so keen either. I think it's a bit harsh on Leipzig, of course it is, and Nagelsmann has come up before the Dusseldorf game saying, like, he's in my plans very much for the Champions League, I don't know what you're talking about, kind of thing. I think it's a very tricky situation. Ryan Fraser saying to Bournemouth, I'm not going to play again. What are Pedro and Willian going to do at Chelsea?
It looks like they're not going to play again either for the time being.
You know, what are Thiago Silva and Cavani doing for PSG? I mean, all those individual cases that you have to sort
those out, guys, I would assume, would play again. No, I mean,
Yeah, you would think so.
Champions League football, I mean.
Yeah, I know. But again, if they find a club on July the 1st, and that club says, you know what, we can sign you and we give you a 3-year deal, I mean, but you can't play in August with your former, still current club, it's like, wow, okay.
I'm assuming this is something that Chelsea negotiated with Leipzig as part of the deal.
Surely.
It is pretty extraordinary. I mean, Leipzig would have had to agree to it to some degree, in the sense that Chelsea had the leverage.
So.
I mean, they could have paid the clause rather than agreeing a fee. And then Leipzig would have had no leverage at all.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it probably would do Werner some good to have a little more Champions League experience.
Yeah,
I think it could make him a more valuable commodity commercially for Chelsea. He can't play for them until next season anyway.
Yeah.
I guess they felt it would be better to have him around, especially since Pedro and William will be around.
Yeah, true. And imagine, I know it's very hypothetical, but imagine Chelsea turning around against Bayern and they go through. They win 3-0 over there and then they go through on penalty or whatever. And then they play Leipzig in the quarterfinals. You could potentially have a case where Timo Werner is facing his future current club with his former current club.
Yeah, but that happens all the time, though. That happens all the time. Players sign in January for new clubs. I mean,
I know, but this would be even more extreme, in the sense that, you know, this is a season that is so extraordinary that it would still be.
Yeah, it would be. Fantastic. It's a weird one. All right, let's move on to Italy, because the Coppa Italia has been assigned, and it goes to Napoli.
Yeah, well done.
Somebody tweeted that the joke was that, like, oh, well, you know, Sarri needed to leave Napoli for them to win something.
Yeah.
Kind of unkind. He did win the Coppa Italia back in 2012. Jules, this is, it's a remarkable story, I think, from Gattuso's perspective.
Yeah.
I really like Gattuso as a person. I think he's got all the rah-rah qualities and he can build unity in a team and whatever. But I just want to underscore what the turnaround was, because when Gattuso came on and replaced Ancelotti, he was making a fraction of what Ancelotti made.
Yeah.
It was a moment when it appeared certain that Ciro Mertens was going to, was going to leave, and Callejon as well. Now Mertens has signed a new contract. He's staying. It looked certain that Koulibaly and Allen were going to leave and they were going to blow up the team. And I thought it was madness. And yet, Gattuso has them sneaking back up the table. They're up to sixth place.
Yeah.
And now he's delivered this trophy. And he did it his way, playing effectively counterattacking football, which he did against Inter as well.
Yeah.
But it worked also because Juve were so poor.
Oh yeah, Juve was so poor, and I was really disappointed watching the game very, very late. yesterday. I don't know. We'll come to Juve after because I've got a couple of questions to ask you to help me understanding how they can be so poor with the ball, with the players they have, and whether that's, he doesn't have the midfield that, Sarri doesn't have the midfield players that he wants for him to really play that. But for Napoli, I think there's something else. I think Diego Demme, who was maybe a very underrated signing when he came, but I think he's made a big impact in that midfield. I think, like you said, the team spirit is quite incredible. They so well organized and well drilled. We saw that against Barcelona in the Champions League as well, where they had a very good game. And Gattuso maybe is proving us all wrong in the sense that even tactically, I think he's improved if you compare it with this time at Milan, and that he can very much be pragmatic now when he wants to and be able to tactically find the answers to whatever the opposition brings to. And I was really impressed yesterday.
Well,
I have to
let's
say,
be clear.
They played well.
Yeah, no, they won it on penalties. They were mostly counterattacking, but they did create the two best chances of the game. Both of whom actually tremendous, stop. From former Paris Saint-Germain goalkeeper Gigi Buffon, who at 42 years of age, as Juve's backup keeper, of course, he was by far, by some distance, I think, Juve's man of the match.
Yeah.
This could have gotten a lot uglier before that, because imagine they score and then Napoli hit them on the counterattack because Juve have to throw the kitchen sink forward.
So what was the problem then? Is it really, we know how important midfield is for a Sarri team, for the way he wants them to play. Is that because he doesn't have, I mean, yesterday, Pjanic, Bentancur and Matuidi were the three. He had plenty of other options on the bench. Ramsey came on, etc. Bernardeschi came on. Is it because the front three, when Dybala and Cristiano play in that way, it doesn't work out? What is it? What's the main issue for you?
I think it's both. Juve were awful, I thought, against Milan.
Yeah.
Against 10-man Milan for 70 minutes. And they were poor again last night. I think certainly the midfield is a big issue. Pjanic isn't quite right in this moment. But that doesn't change the fact that Bentancur and Matuidi necessarily need to be poor too.
Both were
disappointing. A lot of the focus is going to be on the midfield. A lot of the focus is going to be on the fact that all these free transfers where you thought you were being so clever, instead of paying a big transfer fee, let me go and give a big chunk of cash to the agents who deliver the players. You know, Ramsey was injured. Oh, there's a surprise. You know, when he's there, he doesn't really move the needle much anyway. So obviously midfield is an issue. And midfield is, like you said correctly, it's critical to the way a Saudi team plays. I've never seen a Saudi team with such slow build-up.
Yeah.
And really slow for no reason. I mean, these are it wasn't a great game. It wasn't a high-paced game. But how about you speed things up?
Yeah, I agree.
This team looks so different from not just Saudi's Napoli, but Saudi's first Chelsea team. But then there's no escaping that the front three is an issue, as he said. Cristiano Ronaldo at center forward, especially in a game when you have 70% possession, makes no sense whatsoever. Because you don't want to have Cristiano have to go in a physical battle with Koulibaly all game long. It's not that he can't do it. He's not going to be as sharp. You're not getting the best out of his skills. You know, he played center forward at Manchester United, sometimes when, you know, 10 years ago, or even more than that.
Yeah, more than that.
It's just not fair to him. He had a poor game, and it just completely messes up the front three. I think the logical solution would have been to play, and we said this on the Serie Awesome podcast, play Cristiano and Dybala in a two, and then play Bernardeschi behind, for example. But then he clearly doesn't trust Bernardeschi either. So I don't know. At some point, all those people have been going on and on about how brilliantly constructed this team is, and look, they're so clever with their free signings and whatever. I really start to question that, but Jules, the screws are now turning on Sarri even more than before. Because when they go back, when Serie A starts up again, they just have a 1-point lead over Lazio. They obviously lost the first leg against Lyon in the Champions League.
They lost the Supercoppa d'Italia final as well.
They did to Lazio,
Lazio. So it's two finals in a row for Cristiano losing as well. Him who never loses final, really. It's critical. There's nowhere Sarri can stay if they don't win the league, right? Imagine Lazio beat them to it. It's impossible.
I would be going through my phone and finding Pochettino's number from last summer.
Big time. And also, even if he stays, okay, let's say he stays, and they said to him, do you know why? It was the first season. We've seen at Empoli, we've seen at Napoli, that he needs a bit of time, blah, blah, blah. But if you really want, him to be able to implement what he wants to do, the rebuilding that squad. I mean, half of those 25 players will have to go, and you bring another half, which they can't do. It's crazy. So the easiest way anyway might just be to get rid of him and get someone else, because I don't even know if he will ever have the player at Juve to play exactly the way he wants to play.
No, I mean, obviously Kulusevski's coming next year. But it's these weird obsessions that they have, like this obsession with Douglas Costa.
Right? Yeah.
This is a uniquely Italian thing, right? Because teams are tactically organized, we place this tremendous value on, like, oh, look, he can go one-on-one and beat his man. You know, that's great. But leaving aside the fact that Douglas Costa is usually injured or suspended for half the year, yeah, so he beats a man and then he puts in a rubbish ball. Or he beats a man and then he loses against the next man.
Yeah.
You know, all these factors, to me, it just doesn't feel like a Sarri team. He hasn't put his stamp on the team. And whether it's down to the culture and he's not a cultural fit, and we said he's likely not going to be a cultural fit in the summer, or whether it's down to the players. But, you know, what I don't want to see is, and it feels like this, everybody just going and blaming Sarri and blaming Miralem Pjanic because of the Barcelona thing. You know what? You can go and blame these people, but the reality is, it's probably in Juve's interest if they can swap Pjanic for somebody in Barcelona just for accounting reasons. Yeah. So it's not just Pjanic on his own who's doing this. And the reality about Sarri is he has all these players, all these big-name players on huge money, and I have to start to question the motivation of some of these people and the fact that they can't stay fit. And that's not on Sarri.
Just one last thing we finish on the penalty shootout, because David Ospina, if he hadn't been suspended, you think would have played the game. Because, you know, Cup.
We got to give a shout out to my boy, Alex Meretto, who stepping in again all season long. He's been in and out, him and Ospina. That guy, I think he's a tremendous goalkeeper.
Young. Yeah, still young. So he should not have played. He ended up playing because Ospina is suspended. Yeah. He makes, which I thought was a wonderful save on the Dybala penalty. Danilo, I've got no words for Danilo. I mean, this is just the whole attitude, the run up to the penalty, the way he blasted over the bar. I mean, I don't know, but you know where I've got issues?
By the way, Danilo is the epitome of what we're talking about. Oh,
yeah.
Veteran, big name player. He played for City and Real Madrid. Oh, and look, we can swap him so that, you know, accounting wise, it'll make even more sense.
I've got an issue as well, and, you know, maybe it's not a big thing, but Cristiano clearly was the fifth penalty taker, you would think, for Juve, right? Because he wants to be the one, in as often as it happens in the shootout, that scores the final one and you win.
Why didn't he move up?
If Cristiano goes first, and Juve starts with a winning penalty.
We saw this before at the
Euros.
But
this is like, I don't know. I know all the big players do it, and when I was playing, I wanted to be the fifth one because you score, it was great.
Cristiano of your team.
No, I wasn't. But like, you know, that's the thing. But by the way, did you see Lorenzo Insigne just before Milik go and to take his pen, go to the ref and said, If he scores, we win. Because I think sometimes if you're so focused, you're not really sure exactly what the score is, what you have to do anyway. Yeah, so well done to Napoli and to Lorenzo Insigne.
And Jules, we have another piece of breaking news. It's like we're some sort of live radio show here. UEFA, the executive committee, of course, they're meeting by video conference. As expected, also, they announced measures to relax or adjust, I should say, financial fair play, because of the effects of the pandemic.
Yeah.
Without going into too much detail, effectively, what they're going to do is they're not going to count the 2019-20 season until 2020-21, and then they're going to put the two of them together while making adjustments for assessments of the financial impact, of the pandemic. They've left themselves flexibility. I mean, it's not going to be that somebody can, you know, go and start blowing money because of the pandemic.
No.
I don't think anybody's in the mood to go and do that. But obviously, it's going to mean that in the short term, for 2020, they're only going to be assessed over 2 years, 2018 and 2019.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's a reasonable decision. Other item of news coming out of this is that they're going to invite the FAs to harmonize the transfer window next season so that it closes on October 5th, and October 6th will be the deadline to register new players for the 2020-21 Champions League. Let's move on to some quick hits.
Let's go, Gab.
Bayern won away at Werder Bremen to win their 8th straight Bundesliga title. No surprise there. Jules, are they your favorites to win the Champions League too?
I mean, you know, the heart says PSG, obviously, as my favorite. The head says Bayern Munich. Yeah, the more I watch them, I think Bundesliga is too easy for them. It was too easy. Although, if you look at, I think it was maybe at the beginning of December when they were 7th. I think they were 8 or 9 points behind Mönchengladbach at the time. And you have to give Flick a lot of credit for the way he turned things around. And the players, obviously, again, I think they're way, way better than everybody else in that league. But well done to them. And when it comes to the Champions League, we saw them at Chelsea. We were both there and they were so impressive. I think since then they've looked even better. I don't know if having no games for 6 weeks between the end of the Bundesliga and then when they play again in the Champions League will be a disadvantage compared to Chelsea, for example, or others who will go straight into the end of the league and then the Champions League. I don't know, but I have to say they look so strong in every department.
You know what they should do just to keep themselves fit and focus? They and Leipzig should both put, say, 10 million into a pot and say, let's play a best of three series throughout July, right?
With the teams that are in the Europa League as well. So I don't know who they have left in the Europa League. Maybe.
Yeah, they could play with Paris Saint-Germain as well, right? They've got nothing to do, yeah. And Lyon, why not?
Oh my God, that's the Super League that we've all dreamed of. Yeah,
yeah, the July Super League.
Yeah, let's.
The Alsace Super League. I want to make a point though about Bayern. I mean, this on the show, right? People's reaction, oh, so boring, blah, blah, blah. They've got so much, you know, 8 in a row. And it's true, and I have an excellent column dropping today in part about why the usual arguments about things being boring don't really, there's a whole bad for business argument and people don't want to watch a league where they know who the winner is. I'm not sure that's really true. Certainly not in Germany. But I think we have to give them credit because they won the league despite having their highest paid player, Philippe Coutinho, effectively contributed their huge signing in the summer on loan, with a huge loan fee. They're committing something like 30 million to him, contributing virtually nothing, this season, or contributing very little. Their most expensive signing ever, Lucas Hernandez, only starting, I think, 8 games this season.
Yeah, I mean, half of the defense was
their second
injured.
Most expensive signing, your buddy Corentin Tolisso, also on the Tolisso plan.
Well, don't blame the French.
I'm not, I just have a go to Nicolas Zule, remember, it's supposed to be Zule Hernandez. He goes down, in September? They overcame a ton of adversity.
And they had Niko Kovac as a manager.
Niko Kovac. They had to change a manager in midseason. All this stuff, like, stability, you can't change your manager. It really doesn't affect them. They had Manuel Neuer's contract situation, which could have been an enormous, enormous distraction. He is the team captain, after all, and you're signing his replacement in Alexander Nubel. They've had all these things going on, and they come back, and they win, 17 of 18 games? That is absolutely tremendous, and you have to give them credit for that.
Yeah, definitely. And then, we can't wait to see them in the Champions League. You know, what's next? Well, Gab, UEFA's Exco met on Tuesday and confirmed what we already knew. The Champions League will be played in a straight knockout in Portugal from the quarterfinals all the way to the final in August. That makes sense, right?
Totally. It's going to be an Elite Eight format, if you will. Single legs.
It's quite cool.
It's going to be like a little tournament. Yeah. There might even be fans there. Alexander Cheferin, I was on the call yesterday, saying, there's no way we can answer it now, but, let's see down the road. Maybe we can get some people
time.
In.
It's in
6 weeks or 2 months' time. They also announced the schedule for internationals. They're going to have triple headers rather than double headers next season to try and catch up, obviously, with a lot of international games.
Although that's a bit tricky for clubs, right?
Because I don't think clubs are going to be very happy.
With your international players for the end of your preseason, maybe preparation and stuff.
But you know what?
There's
give and take. There's got to be give and take here. The Europa League will be in Germany and the Women's Champions League. And by the way, I think it's really good that they're able to finish that
as
well.
I agree.
Because they will lose money on it, but I think it's important and it sends an important message when so many women's leagues around Europe have been canceled. That's going to be in Bilbao, the final. So Yeah, I'm glad it happens. I hope I get to go.
Yeah, me too. With you, guys. I mean, you know, 2 weeks in Lisbon for Final Eight Champions League is pretty, it's pretty cool.
In August, bit of sunshine, August, bit of beach, yeah, oh my bit God, of seafood,
yeah, yeah,
bit of bacalao.
Nice. Oh yeah,
all right, baby.
And also for the remaining last 16 games, so the Juve,
yes,
Lyon,
on the 7th and 8th.
Yeah, either they could play in their home stadium or they could play to Portugal, yeah, if the situation.
That's
is.
To be determined. And again,
yeah,
I
yeah.
think
again that's a good.
We want common sense. We want flexibility, right? It's not that far from Lyon to Turin.
No.
You can drive there in three, four hours.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, maybe that's a better solution than having these guys go to Portugal if it's safe to play.
True.
Now, two games back, two wins, 6 goals for Barcelona, who beat Leganés on Tuesday night. Jules, does it feel they're firing on all cylinders or kind of just doing the bare minimum?
I mean, we said it a little bit after the first game at Mallorca, and we said, okay, they're warning Messi stole the show again, but there was a few issues, although Vidal played well, but there's already a few issues there. And then that game, I was like, wow, okay, Ansu Fati scored the first goal and his first touch was good and the finishing is good, but apart from that, there was just nothing in that first half. And the second half, there's obviously Messi's penalty, and the run for the penalty is just surreal.
Was he actually fouled though?
I'm not sure he was fouled. He was fouled 1,000 times before, running towards the box. But yeah, in the box, I'm not so sure. He scores the pen. But I mean, collectively, there's just nothing. I don't see any pattern. I don't see any triangles. I don't see any 1-2s. I don't see any overlap fullbacks. There was no Jordi Alba on the left-hand side, although Junior Firpo did okay. But I'm just like, why? There's just nothing.
Yeah, and I wonder how the game might have changed if Leganés had taken those
early chances.
They
had two huge chances early on. One Testegen save, one Longley saves on his line. There's a Testegen save. They hit the post. I'm like, wow. And it's just, and Griezmann, I mean, I find it really sad. I really find it sad, Gavin. I know you're smirking at me, but I like the guy. And I just, again, wonder, and we touched upon it on Monday, if it's just complete wrong move for everybody.
And I know it's obvious how Barcelona feel about him, because they clearly disrespected him by not giving him an official Barcelona face. This is something you pointed out.
I mean, I wanted to cry in front of my television for him. He was sat there with like those little blue. Oh my God.
Okay, yeah, let's explain this. You notice that all the Barcelona players are wearing official Barcelona face masks.
So Umtiti is there with a nice one with the Barca logo, and Vidal had the one before. And then I see my boy coming off and they give him like a crappy little one,
like
blue one. I'm like, what?
Poor Griezmann.
Come on, Griezmann. Well, we were all wondering about social distancing and medical protocols and playing behind closed doors and fake crowd noises, but it was goal line technology that was the big talking point in Aston Villa's 0-0 draw with Sheffield United, Gab, yesterday.
Yeah, so in case you've been under a rock and haven't seen this, Ollie Norwood sends sort of a big looping ball into the box. Nyland, the goalkeeper, goes up to collect it, and then somehow, also because he's not very good, steps backward, ends up in his own net. Very obvious. Somebody said it was it was like Rashidi Yekini's goal celebration in 1994 World Cup. Shout out to my Super Eagles there. And so you assume it's an obvious goal, right? But Michael Oliver's got the little goal decision system device, and it's supposed to vibrate if the ball crosses the line. Now, it doesn't vibrate. Nothing happens. Play goes on. VAR doesn't intervene. Now, we've had statements, the people who supply the goal decision system. And by the way, I find it hilarious how everybody was like, well, VAR technology, but they all love the goal decision system.
Yeah.
Now, this thing doesn't work. They come out and they say, well, they gave some stupid technical thing. Go, well, you know, the goalkeeper was obstructing occluding, I think they said. great word usage there. Your thesaurus is out. The cameras in the goal. It's the first time it's happened in 9,000 games. That's what you say. Who keeps count?
We had those similar incidents in France, by the way.
No, it's the first time it's ever happened in 9,000 games. And whatever. Now, most people are going to ask, why didn't VAR intervene? I'm going to give Michael Oliver a pass because, look, he's on the pitch. He's focusing on many different things, on fouls. Maybe you didn't have a sideline. Maybe you didn't see it. Maybe the wrong angle.
Yeah, he was.
But the VAR is watching on television with the rest of us, right?
Yeah.
Why doesn't this guy say, Michael, I guess the goal decision system thing didn't vibrate, but this certainly looked like a goal. Why don't you step down a second and let me take a closer look at this? Maybe it's broken. Do you want me to find out if it's broken, right? This is what a normal person in the, I don't know who the VAR is. I'd name and shame him if I could, but I don't even want to name check the fool. And it didn't happen.
Yeah. And so on that, Gab.
Oh, you're going to tell me who it was.
No, the PGMOL says in a statement that, which I'm not really sure I understand, but maybe that's because I'm not English. I don't know, but that Michael Oliver didn't receive a signal.
Yeah, we know that.
The unique nature of that means that the VAR did not intervene. So they don't really say why they didn't. I don't know if they.
The IFAB protocol specifically says that the VAR, if there's a problem with the goal decision system, it's the VAR's duty and responsibility to intervene, as well as it is to go and intervene in cases of obvious errors. This was an obvious error. Unless the VAR was scratching his backside or something, he's watching the game, he can see that the ball goes into the net. And a normal person says, oh, I know there's a goal decision system, but, you know, I really shouldn't abdicate all responsibility here. I should come out and find out what happened. Is it not working?
Yeah.
Can I just take a second? Yeah. Should I tell Michael to stop the game, right?
Yeah. I mean, in fairness,
look, just come out and say it. VAR is human. The guy made a mistake. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
Not as the unique nature of, we understand the unique nature. It's not the thing that the thing broke. You know, stuff happens.
In fairness, after 3 months without football, one guy had one job, is to make sure that goal line technology was working. I mean, that's all he had to do. Make sure it's working.
Two guys screwed up at the same time. Whoever's in charge, you know, the Hawkeye people with all their fancy stuff.
They are doing a job.
The VAR as well. Because remember, it's a human eye.
They should be out of a job.
You know, Michael Oliver, whatever. He's got to trust. If the thing doesn't vibrate, the VAR doesn't talk to him.
Yeah.
You know, it looked like a goal, but maybe it wasn't.
Now when Sheffield United would miss out on the Champions League or the Europa League.
Well, this is the thing. It has huge implications. Sheffield United would be, they would be ahead of Manchester United right now. They would be in fifth place right now.
I mean, and this could also, if they'd won the game, had that goal been allowed, right? You don't know.
We don't know, but they would have been 1-0
up. Yeah.
I mean, you know, ultimately, we can only go by what actually happened on the pitch. And it has implications at the bottom of the table as well. For Watford and for the other teams that are fighting to avoid relegation. This is a point Aston Villa had, which they might not have had otherwise.
And you know what? If you're the Premier League and you've prepared this restart and you've been criticized and rightly so by us and by a lot of people because you took so long and you were such a mess for a long time. And then it's finally here. First game, and it's a boring 0-0 draw, and as well, you've got that, you must be livid.
I mean,
the best league in the world.
If I'm Mike Riley, I get whoever the guy was in the VAR, and I read him the Riot Act, because I guarantee you the Premier League are reading the Riot Act to Mike Riley. And as Augie might say, if he were still with us, Sheffield United got relegated years ago, because of the Carlos Tevez situation
and compensation.
I might want to talk to some lawyers here as well. You never know. Timo Werner and Kevin Campbell scored great goals, but Leipzig contrived to throw it all away against Fortuna Dusseldorf, squandering their two-goal lead and drawing 2-2 while giving up two goals in the last 6 minutes of the game. Jules, this was bad, especially my boy and yours, Dayot Upamecano.
It was bad, Gab, and it could cost them, obviously, that draw. Do you know what? So I think he's got incredible talent, Upamecano, and I love him. And sometimes I watched him play like this, like in a game against Lyon in the Champions League where he made some mistakes. And I'm thinking like, he can't defend. Like, I don't know what's wrong. I don't know if in his head he's tired, it's the end of the game, he's too confident. I don't know what it is. But you see that. Right. And
he's a kid. He's still very young.
Gab, he's a kid. He's been playing for 3 years
That's
now.
That's fine. But I always invite people who are ready to go and destroy, especially young central defenders who make mistakes. Go see where Koulibaly was playing when he was 21. Go see what level Virgil van Dijk was playing at when
he was
21.
Right.
And bear that in mind and look at where they are now.
No. I agree with you. Yeah. And I'm not, this is no, not, no. you know, this is not, but sometimes wonder, I see two different players in him. Sometimes he's so good defensively and sometimes he makes those mistakes. And I just find it hard to reconcile the two. That's all. Well, staying in Germany, Borussia Dortmund's season is ending with a whimper. Beaten at home by Mainz, 2-0. Gab, were you expecting this?
No, I wouldn't expect Dortmund were going to be so bad. I know we gave them the pass, the injuries, the break, blah, blah, blah. But the last couple of games, they needed those late goals. At some point, much as we love Lucien Favre, you know, you got to say, enough's enough. You know, let's move on, because I expected them. They only finished 2 points back last year. They added all these guys over the summer. And you ask yourself, and plus Haaland and Sean, right? You know, a Brandt, Hazard.
A better Sancho.
You know, and yet here you are. you got to ask yourself, is this the right person to keep growing the young talent that we're going to have?
We had that debate already, and I'm not sure there's that many that can come and replace him, but that's another story. But isn't it because as well, they already qualify for the Champions League. They can't win the league. So maybe just psychologically, from Favre probably, and maybe even the players, it was a bit like, there's no fans in the stadium.
Stop making excuses.
You don't play. No, but
making excuses. It's not just about this game. Monaco have a new sporting director, Paul Mitchell Jules. He's 38 years old. I don't know that there's anybody that young that has such an impressive resume. Southampton, Spurs, the Red Bull Group.
Yeah.
And now Monaco. But I wonder, is this a good move for him?
Given
what we know about Monaco.
Yeah. So.
It just seems odd.
Yeah. So, okay. The answer is yes, because there's so much to rebuild. There's a lot of players to sell and to let go. Obviously, it's a squad with 64 players under contract.
All 64.
24 of them were on loan this season, for example.
63 of them were the same agent. Stop it.
So big job on his hands, but also I think the rebuilding process with the money they have is very, very exciting, I think, for someone like him who is very good, you know, especially on the market for young players and he's a very clever kid. So I would say yes, but I would say also no to your question because, yeah, it is difficult. They've been a shambles since winning the league in 2017. I mean, I wrote a piece for the website that's coming up very soon, I think today or tomorrow, about the mess that is. They've changed manager 5 times, sporting directors 3 times. They've had 2 different CEOs, or sort of CEOs running the club, Vasiliev before, Petrov now, you know. And all of that, I'm not sure if I would have gone in, but clearly he thought it was a better opportunity for him than staying out in the Red Bull.
I'm just surprised, given how important recruitment is, I'm just surprised that bigger clubs didn't look at him or didn't go for him a deal.
He didn't wait and
hold out for that. Maybe they just think he's still too green, too young.
Yeah,
I don't
maybe.
Know. I mean, again,
I think financially,
he's 38 years old, but.
I think financially, Monaco made a really big offer. You know, living in Monaco where lifestyle is pretty awesome, paying taxes.
He's got to be a little bit careful, I think, because as talented as he is, he hasn't stayed in these jobs very long. And remember, you know, in England, he's known as the guy who went to Spurs and then fell out with Pochettino and kind of left after 6 months straight away. That would be my caveat. If things go south here, he's hurting himself.
True.
But he's obviously very talented.
It'd be easier for him to work with Robert Moreno now as a manager than he would have been with Jardim before, who would have made his life very difficult.
It's not fun working with Jardim.
Thierry Henry as well. So, well, finally, Gab, Atletico Madrid run rampant against Osasuna, winning 5-0. I mean, I can't even remember the last time we saw them scoring so many goals. Why don't we see this more often? And is Marcos Llorente as a second striker the answer that Diego Simeone was looking for?
Surely not. I wouldn't have thought so.
Yeah.
But, you know what? The guy has so much energy. He's so athletic. He seems to be a good foil for Diego Costa. Now, if on top of that, you also have Correa and João Félix
in that form,
you know, it makes a huge difference. I don't know. This is a very, we can't just let the scoreline fool us here. Because obviously, you know, a lot of the goals came late and whatever.
Yeah.
But I was just struck by how much individual quality, you know, there is in the Herrera pass early on that which ultimately led to the goal. What we saw from João Félix, who, you know,
Correa
hopefully next
well,
season we go to next level. Correa, tremendous.
Yeah.
There is a ton of quality in this side, and I don't know. I feel a little bit re-energized.
But you don't play Osasuna every week, though, right?
That's
the thing,
Jules. It's a sad moment
because we've
run out of letters of the alphabet for Alphabet 11.
Yeah,
here. For the last time, until we figure out a new gimmick the next time the next pandemic rolls around, here is the Z Team.
The Z Team, Gab, you're right. Thank you again for everybody that's played since later A. We've had some struggles. What was it? Q was quite hard.
X wasn't much fun either.
X was fun. We had some letters that were really easy, like M, and even this Z in a way. Today was not too hard, so thank you for all of you who send your very creative teams for some of them. Ibest 16, our friend, had a all-French Z team. believe it or not. He's got Lucas Zidane, obviously one of the four sons of Zinedine. Alexis Zimjak, who plays in a lower club at Club de Croix. Kurt Zuma, Zagadou, Zagre as well from Monaco. Enzo Zidane, another son. Cyril Zabou, again lower league in the third division. Driss Zidane, who is Zidane's nephew, who plays in the lower league in Marseille. Zerkan Zitouni and Zinga. And obviously, only one manager possible, Zinedine Zidane.
Has Mohamed Zidane retired?
I think he's retired. And also, it doesn't have an E at the end, does it?
Still starts with a letter Z.
I know.
I'm not suggesting they're related,
Zidane,
but
okay. It's a Zidane. That's not really a Zidane. Habib 144 and his team. Zila in goal. Zaldua, Zagadou, Zuma, and Zeka at the back. Zakaria, Zielinski, and Zichenko in midfield. And Ziyech, Zapata, and Zuber up front. We've had another Zidane 11. We can't repeat it all, but from Raul this time. We have an All MLS 11 from Aaron Motes, Zendejas in goal, Ziegler, Zuparic, Zimmerman and Zavaleta, Zelalem, Zahibo, Zelarayan and Zuzi in midfield, and Zardes and Zubak up front, and maybe one more. Where we go, Eamon Mike-Hale, Azilo in goal, Zinchenko, Zagadou, Zapata, Zapacosta at the back, Zakaria, Zielinski and Zarate in midfield with Zaniolo, Zapata and Ziyech up front. Pretty good. I mean, there were a lot of options, to be fair, so.
Alright, ladies 11, Sophie Lawson coming up big once again. She's got For the last time, yes. This has been a fascinating head-to-head between her and
Miguelito.
Exactly. She's got Jialin N'Golo, Jiai Kingwei, Shayna Zadorsky, Charlene Zamet, and Sandra Zigic at the back. Matea Zver, Katie Zellum, McCall Zerboni, and Sarah Zadrazi. McCall Zerboni is a real person?
Must be, yeah.
Okay. If you're listening.
Oh, yeah.
You know who she is?
She's in Miguel's team as well. She's American.
It would be really cool to have her on the podcast. I'm just curious about.
Yeah. McCall, if you hear us, please.
There's something about American footballers and unusual names, as Keegan Rosenberry will testify. Yeah. And then up front, it's Bia Zanerato and Giulia Zigiotti. Well done, Sophie. Thank you so much for playing.
Thank you, Sophie. So Miguel, in his last team as well, he went for an all Confederation Z team, 11 different countries. He's got Zinsberger from Austria in goal, Zawadzka from Poland, Zuwaitratu from Cameroon, and Zadorski from Canada at the back, Zerboni, Zambrano, Zanotti, Zale, and Zorabinia from Iran, Papua New Guinea, Brazil, Venezuela, and USA in midfield, and up front, Zhang from China and Zulu from Zambia. I mean, he managed to put a Papua New Guinea player in there, which
I think that might be a first. So well done.
Yeah, well done, Mikel. Gab, it's the last one.
Well, I went with Luca Zidane in goal. So I did consider Ron Robert Zieler, but I think it's, I'm always creeped out by the number of German goalkeepers who've got who have two names separated by a hyphen, you know, whether it's Marc-Andre Ter Stegen or Hans-Jörg Boot back in the day. I just think it's stupid. And Ron Robert is especially an especially ugly combination. So, of course, it's got to be Luca Zidane. At the back, Pablo Zabaleta, who is one of the good guys. He may graduate to join the Warriors of the Light after he graduates the Academy of Football at West Ham. At the back, Zubeldia from Real Sociedad and your boy Kurt Zuma.
Yeah.
Zinchenko at left back in midfield. My whole team is you can call it 4-4-2, but it's that 4-2-2-2 formation so popular in South America.
Maybe you would have won the Battle of the Leagues with that.
I may have. I've got Dennis Zakaria from Bayer Leverkusen, who also came up very big for my Bundesliga team when he came on. And of course, Piotr Zielinski, freshly crowned Coppa Italia champion from Napoli. Then the two, Hakim Ziyech and of course, Nicolò Zaniolo from Roma, and up front, Duvan Zapata, whose name means shoe, as you know, and Joshua Zirkzee, freshly crowned.
Nice, as your striker, you went with Zirkzee. Très bien. Oh, that's good. Okay, my team, apart from the goalkeeper, all my outfield players are only left-footed. Ooh. So I know you're going to say, oh, not very balanced. They're balanced tactically, but they're all left-footed, which, as we all know, left-footed people or left-handed people are more talented. Here you go. I've got Robin Zentner from Mainz in goal, just to be a bit, to have another German goalkeeper there. So I've got Reto Ziegler at right back, although I know he's left-footed.
Ziegler's still playing?
At Dallas, he plays. I've got Zukanovic from Spal in midfield with Zagadou and Zinchenko from Manchester City at left back. I'm going for a 4-3-3 formation. So in my midfield three, I've got Erin Zivkovic from Benfica. I think you could have had a whole team of Zivkovic, by the way. So Zivkovic, Ziegler from Udinese, Marvin Ziegler. And then on the other side, I have Zagrovra from Basel. And then my front three is Zaniolo on one side, Ziyech on the other side, and Simone Zaza, your favorite player.
I purposely left out Simone Zaza. The man is dead to me.
Left-footed.
After what he did.
Best penalty runner-up.
By the way, let's end the show by giving a shout-out to players to show that when players do speak up, if they're popular enough and they put enough energy behind it.
Yes.
We spoke about him on Monday.
Yeah.
Tremendous gesture from,
incredible.
More than a gesture actually, from the Manchester United striker Daniel Rashford.
Yes.
Who,
Daniel,
of course,
aka Marcus.
AKA Marcus, yes. Yep. Sorry, it's a shout out to my buddy Peter Pandemic, Matt Hancock, who decided to call Marcus Rashford Daniel Rashford. But, of course, he promoted a letter to the government about the need to extend the free meals voucher to
during the summer.
Poor kids who are eligible over the summer. The government went with it. I wonder if he was thinking about Harry Potter and Daniel Radcliffe when he sort of mixed Daniel
There's
Radcliffe.
No issues.
Marcus
I don't
Rashford.
Care what he was thinking of. This is a disgrace. Absolutely. But well done to Marcus Rashford, because let's not take away by talking too much about, you know, the other idiots.
Okay. All right.
Well done, Marcus.
Let's move on.
That's wonderful.
Have a great weekend. We're going to be back on Monday, where we're going to be joined by a champion of the world.
Champion of the world.
Give you a hint. He's not English.
And he doesn't have hair.